Is this good, Angie? Do I need to do anything? Yeah, we're good. Okay. Yes.
I've started facilitating for the girls' young adults sessions at my church.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been doing like breakout small group discussions after our large group Thursday night young adult
awesome.
Sessions. So,
yeah. Great. Great. So you just want to learn more about how to lead those and what it takes.
Yeah.
Excellent. Very good. Should we start? 3 extra minutes. Be worth the price of admission. All right. This is super fun. Thanks for coming here. Thanks for being willing to get crammed all the way in the back corner. If more people do come in, maybe we can just sort of slide down and make room. But we'll go. We've got an hour. This is being recorded. So if, as I talk quick through stuff, you can capture it on the back end. I am going to use Flipchart. You can grab photos of stuff during the session as we go or afterwards. Happy for you to do that. I'm going to stick around after. If you've got questions, I'm here for the rest of the day. My name's Chris Vache. It's awesome to be here. I love Outpour. I've come for several years. Paul, who runs this, is a good friend of mine. And I was loving that you went to the panel because Chris is a good, really good friend of mine. VJ was there, really good friend of mine. Paul was up there. I spent 20 years working in church ministry. I was a pastor. I was a worship pastor, a creative arts pastor. I was on staff at a church with multiple locations. And so I was helping to oversee that. We had a big staff team. I was leading our whole kind of in a chief of staff role. And then I was an executive pastor. Executive pastors kind of do all the things that senior pastors don't want to do. And it's really more around kind of leading the organizational side of the church. And in 2018, started my grad work. I did a master's degree in leadership at a university in Vancouver called Trinity Western. And as I was doing that, I just continued to grow, become more passionate about seeing lots of examples of like good leadership in theory. Like we've got lots of leadership podcasts and lots of leadership books, and there's lots of bad leaders. And that like was really breaking my heart. And and unfortunately, in ministry contexts, we see lots of examples of bad leadership in churches. And so 4 years ago, I stepped away from a really stable paycheck of working in churches, and I started a leadership consulting company. And so we work primarily with churches and ministries and Christian nonprofits, because we know lots of organizations that like love Jesus and want to make a difference, and things are good, and they're growing, and then all of a sudden they get really complicated. And most pastors, most charity executive directors don't know how to do the organizational stuff. And so they get pulled away from their primary calling. But I also get to work with lots of companies and executive leaders who are trying to navigate leadership. And so I get to walk alongside companies. I don't get to be as open about my faith as a follower of Jesus and how that shapes what leadership is. But I do get to talk to them about leadership from a really unique perspective that they probably haven't heard before. So I think about leadership a lot. I read a lot about it. I talk about it a lot. And this is a really interesting opportunity because most of my conversations, and actually the talk that we're going to work through today, I typically do this with old people. And I get to talk to them about how they think about leadership and how that's very different from the way that younger people feel about leadership. And I'm not going to look at anyone specifically in the room, but we have a mix of older people and younger people in the room today, which is great because older people who are in the room are going to hear about how younger people think about leadership. And it's actually fairly different. Young leaders have a very different perspective, understanding even on what leadership is. And if we don't understand that, it doesn't matter if you're in church or in corporation, if we don't understand how different generations think about leadership differently, we get all kinds of issues. So it's going to be fun. We're going to have a good time. Here's what I want you to start. Everybody grab, if you've got a book and a pen, or if you've got your phone, just something to write some stuff down. I want to give you 30 seconds to just write down on your own, what is a leader? What is a leader? What is leadership? You don't need a definition. Words, bullet points, totally fine. What is a leader? What is leadership? nobody told me there was homework. Okay. Turn to the person beside you, share your list with them, and together I want you to come up with a top five list. Top five with the person beside you. 2 minutes. 2 minutes. Has everybody got somebody? You need somebody? Just butt into that group beside you. Be a group of three. Yeah. Okay, 1 minute, one more minute. Let the other person talk if they haven't. 1 minute. Who's got top five? Who's got it? Hands up. You got top five? Close to it. Close to it. All right. Okay, now you're going to turn to another pair beside you, and together you're going to come up with top three. Okay, top three lists. What is a leader? What is leadership? I'm going to give you 3 minutes to do this. No. Just your pair join with another pair, and you're going to come up together with a top three. It's awesome. 1 more minute. 1 minute. Top three. You got top three going?
Oh, like,
rude. Okay, we good? We good? We good? Yeah. Oh, she's like, I got it. Okay. Who's got top three? Who's got top three? Yeah. Okay. All right. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to hear from groups. And what I want you to do is I want you to share one item that's on your top three. And I might ask you to like give a little bit more context because it might be a word. Like, what do you mean when you say that word? And if you have that word or that idea in your top three, just put your hand up, okay? We're going to try and see, like, who got the right answer. No, we're going to try and see, like, what's the shared opinion consensus there. We're going to start in the back corner. Who's in the back corner there? Yeah, give us one of your words from your top three. What's a leader? What is leadership? Responsible for main things. Why is it important for a leader to be responsible for main things? Why is it important for a leader to be responsible for main things? Yeah.
I think it was supposed to be like many things.
Many things. Being a leader means you're responsible for many things. I mean, main things is not a bad... Okay. Who had that idea in your top three? Just yours? One, two. Okay. Very good. Okay, next group. Group in front of them. What's one item on your top three? Sets the example and follows through. So there's credibility. I apologize for my handwriting. It's never going to get any better. So who had that or like that idea on their list? One, two, three, four. Hey, good one. Looks like five. Okay. Next group.
Selfless.
Why is it important for a leader to be selfless? Hey. Great. Yeah. The opposite of selfless is selfish. Nobody wants to work for a selfish leader. Who had selfless or that idea on their list? One, two, three, four. Great. There's no points for this. I'm sorry. Over here. Motivates others to grow. Motivates others to grow. Excellent. Who had that on their list? Yeah. Motivates others to grow, inspires other people. One, two. All right. Was this a group? Were you a group? What was one of yours on your list? Great. Bringing together. Yeah. Okay, so like building a team, galvanizing people, bringing them together towards a common goal. Who had something like that on their list? One, two, three, four. Yeah, great. Five. Okay, let's move in front here next.
That someone who watches like over the pack, so not really on the pulpit or in front of things, but like.
Okay. So they might be watching over. Or behind the scenes. Not necessarily always the upfront or most visible person. Not always necessarily in that position. Okay, who had that or something like it? One, two, three, four. Okay, let's keep going. These are great. Next group.
Ours are kind of already up there.
Okay. Integrity. Let's pull it that one. Great. Integrity. Who had that or something like it? Yeah, one more. Great. Okay, next group. A leader, someone who serves. Seems a little counterintuitive, but actually really powerful. Oh man, this is getting bad. Who had serves? One, two. I know, you're like, that doesn't even come close to serves. Okay, next group here.
able to communicate with people, not just talk
to them. Oh, communicate with not just two people. Okay, so it's one thing to deliver information. It's another way to do it in a way that people actually receive it and hear it and do something with it. Okay, who had that? Good communication, effective communication. 1, 2, 3, awesome. Okay, who's next? Yeah.
Someone who keeps you accountable, is truthful.
So they keep you accountable, like they tell you the truth of like, this is how things are going, this is what we expect, and there's a gap there. Okay. You had that truthful, holds people accountable. 2, 3, 4. Great. Excellent. Excellent. Okay. I don't know. I lost my way on groups. Wait. Oh, yes. Here.
Who physically and spiritually directs the vision.
What a great definition. I might steal that from you. Somebody who
physically and spiritually directs the vision.
Directs vision. Why is that important? Why is it important for a leader to direct vision to execution? Yeah. Achieve the goal that we said we were going to do. Excellent. Great. Who's next? Yeah.
Accountability to them as a leader.
Self-accountability. Okay. So it's not just, I mean, I think we said something like that, they follow through, but it's not just, hey, I expect all of these things for other people, but different rules for me. A leader is someone who's willing to hold themselves accountable. Okay, who had, anybody else, any groups have that? Sort of self-accountability? One, great. Okay, did I miss any groups? Yeah, you guys.
Yeah, you say the leader is someone who can really find, harness, and coordinate human and material.
Okay, so yeah, so what do we need to get the job done? How are we going to gather together and how are we going to like move them? So it points to this vision to execution, but specifically around human and material resources. Okay, so like coordinate resources. This is an unbelievable. You guys are, so, why are you here? You're all so smart on this stuff. This is great. Anybody else have that on their list? Okay, no, okay. Great. Hear from you.
Somebody who's able to empathize with his team, not just
empathy. Amazing. Anybody else have empathy on their list? Yeah, you did 1, 2, 3. Okay. Have I missed any groups? Have I missed anything from anyone's list that like, I need to say this. I have to put this on the board. Yeah, there's one in the back. Say that again. Why is that important for a leader? Oh, yeah. What if I like my job? Eventually, you're going to be gone. Okay. Woo! What a list. If I put this... Oh. You're already like, this was a bad decision, sir. Okay. If I put this list on a wall, if you look at that list, think about someone who would live out those characteristics, would embody that kind of leadership. Who wants to serve under a leader like that? Who wouldn't want to? Who wants to be a leader like that? It's really interesting, as you were talking, is that we didn't really talk about what culture, what our world tends to talk about what a leader is. That leadership is really about power. I've got the ability to tell you what to do, to make you do something. Leadership tends to be about position. I'm the boss, therefore I'm the leader, therefore you have to do what I say. Or personality, right? Like somebody who's really charismatic and get people to do what they want them to do. In our world, those three P's, power, position, personality, tend to be how leadership is defined. And really, those didn't show up very much on the list at all. Actually, some of the things, actually, it's a person who's not in a position. It's someone who actually serves other people. One thing that we could do, which would be a little bit fun, is if we were to take this list, we could maybe like look at the ones that lots of people said, or we say like, oh, if we were going to come up with a top five, what might be in the top five from that whole list? Sets the example and follows through. Brings people together. Selfless, which could tie in, selfless could tie in servant, it could tie in empathy, right? We could start to connect some of the words together under bigger themes.
Integrity.
A leader who does what they says, what they say they will do, a leader who's the same in different situations, a leader who makes hard decisions and follows through when it's the right thing. Effective communication. Now, the point of the exercise is not like these are necessarily the five that are the be-all and end-all, but you kind of get the way this could work, right? You could do this for yourself. You go home and say, like, what do I think a leader is? And how would I take a bunch of ideas of what I think a leader is, what good leadership is, and start to bundle them together and say, oh, these five or six ideas really define for me when I say leader, when I think about leadership, this is what I think about. And you might then take, you might take these five because they're great. You might have your own list. You might take them home and then say, where do I see these things expressed in Scripture? If I were to look through the Bible, where do I see people who set an example for others and follow through? Where do I see people who bring people together? Where do I see selflessness? And does that look like leadership to me? And the idea in doing that is not to like make the Bible fit your definition of leadership. But one thing as young leaders to begin to do is to begin to build a personal, not just philosophy of leadership, but a personal theology of leadership. How do I think scripturally about leadership? I mean, we could just like take all this and say like, be like Jesus, right? Yeah, but it's going to get lived out and fleshed out in a bunch of ways. Let me give you my own like personal theology of leadership and how I did some exercises like this to go through this process. Like, what do I think leadership actually is? Where do I see these things expressed in Scripture? How do I need to shift my definition, my understanding of leadership to be more aligned with what the Bible says? And how would I think about this? So for me, my own personal theology of leadership is around three verses or passages in Scripture. I'm sharing this with you because you might want to go home and do the same kind of thing. I'm not telling you that these three have to be yours. Psalm 78, 72, Ephesians 4, and 1 Corinthians 12. Psalm 78, 72, God calls David out of the sheepfold to shepherd Israel with an upright heart and to guide them with a skillful hand. To shepherd Israel with an upright heart and guide them with a skillful hand. And being in ministry, my leadership context for most of my years, what I was seeing was we tend to expect and evaluate one or the other. So like that person has a skill, they're really good at doing something, they should be a leader. Or like she's got a great heart, we should let her lead. And to me, Psalm 78, 72 says, actually both should be expected. And we shouldn't pull back from having high expectations on skillful hand and upright heart. So that really shaped for me how I thought about leadership. Ephesians 4 is also singing for me that Jesus gives certain kinds of leaders, apostles, prophets, teachers, shepherds, evangelists, to do what? To equip the saints to do the work of the ministry. Not to do it themselves. The point of leadership is not to be the person who can get everything done, but my context, mostly in ministry, to equip and empower and resource other people to do what we need to do, because 1 Corinthians 12, we're the body of Christ. Some of us are hands, some of us are feet, some of us are elbows, some of us are armpits, ankles, whatever it is. But we can't be the body together if we don't all play the role that we play. So some of us are called as leaders to equip others, and we need each other as the body. We need to be in community. And that's not that other people need me. in a lot of ways, I need other people. Because I've got parts of me that I can't see. I've got blind spots. I've got significant areas of growth that need to happen. And so I need people in my life who can very kindly, gently, sometimes not so kindly, in love, point those out. And as you build a personal theology of leadership, it has to include some understanding of how are you shaped in community. Because you can't be a leader who follows Jesus completely disconnected from the body. And that doesn't mean to be a pastor, but to be a leader who follows Jesus in any context, corporate, executive, in the world, marketplace, whatever, who is outside of community. So this for me is my own personal theology of leadership that came out of what do I understand and think about leadership. And this now shapes so much of what I do. So I'll give you that as like homework assignment. We're not going to do this now. But to do this exercise, what do I think leadership is? Where do I see that in the Bible? How do I need to reshape my understanding? And how does this help to shape what I believe leadership is? As I've developed that, and now in the work that I do, we really have taken a bunch of characteristics and grouped them down into four key characteristics of leadership. So what do we mean when we say leadership? And what do we look for in leaders? What do we pay attention to for ourselves when we're thinking about developing leaders and giving them opportunity, which you as young leaders are trying to navigate? That's the whole point of this workshop. But also, how do we ourselves think about how we grow as leaders? And these four big characteristics: character, competency, credibility, chemistry. Character, competency, credibility, chemistry. Character I pointed to already from Psalm 78, that David shepherds Israel with an upright heart. This idea of an upright heart is someone who is of good character. For me, that's typified mostly in the Beatitudes, Sermon on the Mount, and Fruit of the Spirit. Is this someone who lives out integrity, who is who they say they are, who follows through on hard decisions? Character we often talk about as someone who is the same when nobody's watching. I think the opposite is true. Character is you are the same when everybody's watching, which is often the hardest time to stay true to character. Unfortunately, we see lots of examples in the church, in the world, of leaders who do not have the character needed to sustain the position they've been given. We see lots of examples of people who move into positions because of personality or power, and they have leadership authority, but they do not have the character to sustain that. And like I said, we have lots of examples we can point to of leaders who cause lots of damage for themselves and in the lives of other people because they've neglected character as part of their growth and their development. And character is something that you can intentionally develop. Character isn't something that just happens by accident. Fruit of the Spirit. Character is the thing that grows out of you as you spend more time in relationship with Jesus, as you spend more time in community, as you spend more time learning more about yourself, as you spend more time growing and developing. Character is not something that happens overnight. It's like a crockpot thing, not a microwave thing. The good and bad news of character is that it always reveals itself. Upright heart people are known as upright heart people because who they are when nobody's watching is the same as who they are when everybody's watching. And people of bad character, that gets found out too. It might not be right away. It might be they might do a really good job of hiding bad character, but eventually bad character is revealed. It gets found out. It's a crucial aspect of leadership. Second crucial aspect of leadership is competency. What do we mean when we say competency? What does that word mean?
You're able to being certain.
Sorry?
Being certain
what you're doing. I heard you saying. You're able to do the job. You've got the skills to pay the bills. So can I do what's needed for the role? As young leaders, you're thinking like, what are the skills that I need to do the job or to do the next job? Or you're thinking like, oh, I would love to one day be in a certain kind of role or have a certain kind of opportunity, you're not going to be able to get there with the competencies that you have today. So you may think about like what kind of education is required, what kind of training is required. If you're in an organization, company, church, whatever it is, and people are coming to you and say like, oh, we could see leadership opportunities for you in your future. One of the questions you should be asking is, what are the skills that are needed for that job? And can you help me understand like where do I meet the expectations and where do I not meet the expectations? Because that opportunity sounds incredible. I'm really, really honored and grateful. And I want to make sure that I'm growing, I'm investing in skill development. That might be on your own, right? You might go and take a course or get some training. Maybe you're in an environment where they would say, oh, we're willing to invest in you so that you would get some competencies to develop to the next level. But leadership is not just, well, I'm in the position because I've got the signature on my email, you have to do what I say, right? One of those characteristics was like somebody who follows through. I've got a level of competency to actually get the job done. Okay, the third one is credibility. In terms of leadership, it's sort of what you're saying, like credibility is the person who delivers on what they say. If you're in an environment and you would like to move to a more senior opportunity, like to get a more significant leadership opportunity, one of the things that other leaders in the organization can be looking to, like, are you credible? Are you trustworthy? If I ask this person to do something, are they going to do it? And not just are they going to do it, but are they going to do it well? Are they going to do it on time? Are they going to do it under budget? Some of you are like, well, it doesn't matter how long it took and how much it costs. Like, I got it done. Oh, but like on time, on budget. Those are important factors with credibility. As you think about other leaders in your world, leaders who don't have credibility, we don't trust them for long, right? It's not just about, well, they're the boss. They said I had to do this. They're like, but I don't think they're trustworthy. They're not credible to me. So this is a significant area for leaders to grow. And the fourth one then is chemistry. And chemistry is sort of when we think as an organization about who we are or who we want to be, is that person a we? Like, are you a we? Are you one of us? Do you feel like you're someone we would love to have on a team? You'll hear a lot of people talk about like, I only want to hire people that I could see myself hanging out with outside of the workplace. That maybe isn't the only filter, but it's something to think about. And with young leaders, one of the things we often will encourage them to think about is that chemistry is really about values. Like, is this the kind of person that values what we value as an organization? Because if you're a young leader in our company, in our ministry, and you're a person of character, you've got skills, and we think you can grow, and this person delivers, they're trustworthy, we just don't really like them. We don't think they like us. Oh, there's a gap there. We have to figure that out. And the likability, the chemistry is really around, do they value what we value? So you'll see companies that have like value statements, churches that have value statements. And the temptation is, as you're chasing a leadership opportunity, to say, oh, you think those things are important? Oh, I think those things are important too. And I'm going to make those things important and figure it out. And instead, well, my encouragement for young leaders is to really spend time thinking about, like, what are my values? What do I care about? What kind of opportunities, what kind of company, what kind of organization do I want to give my time to? Do I want to give my life to? And do I know what I care about more than other people who are in my social circles? And how would I find a company, an organization to say like, oh, you care about that too? Because then from a chemistry perspective, you know there's already alignment there. The pitfall is people who say like, well, there are some things that I value, especially people of faith, right? Like, yeah, there's things that I value. And then a leadership opportunity comes with a bit of power and some money and a cool email signature. And you're like, I get to be the boss and tell people what to do. And it comes at the cost of your personal values. Because you got to say some yes to some things that maybe like, oh, I wouldn't have said yes to that a year ago. Or like, you got to tell people to do some stuff that you're like, I'm not sure that that's something that we should be doing. So really taking time to consider and evaluate and even develop value statements. What do I really care about? And what are some opportunities where I could live out those values. Okay, so these four key characteristics of leadership: character, competency, credibility, chemistry. These are things that other leaders in your world are looking for, and areas to pay attention for you as young leaders. Thoughts, questions, case studies? Turn to the person beside you. Of these four, which one catches your attention? Which one is like, ooh, I didn't realize that was as important as it is? Which one stands out for you? Turn to the person beside you, share with them. 30 seconds. If you're doing all the talking, let the other person talk. Let the other person talk if they haven't yet. 30 seconds. Okay. Awesome. Very good. Very good. The chatter's going. The chatter's going. All right, come on back. I'd love to hear from a few of you who are willing to share which is the one for you that stands out. Maybe from some people we haven't heard from yet, who would be bold and courageous and try to not make eye contact with the guy at the front. What's the one for you that stands out? Okay. Then we got that. So chemistry, yeah, there are some people I get along with, some people I don't. And so how do I intentionally step into environments, or even knowing, oh, there's a reason that we get along. There's a reason I'm so excited about this opportunity. What does that look like for me? Great. Is somebody else we haven't heard from yet? Yeah.
Yeah, I would actually also agree with chemistry.
Okay.
There's like a recent role I stepped into. One of the main things that I did differently that really, really helped was like actually going and having a ton of one-to-ones with different people in the organization.
Yeah.
Specifically, like chemistry, I think, is created where you hear like where they're at, what they need, what problems they're dealing with.
That's great.
And then if you can do to, you know, enable them that,
yeah,
that's awesome. But most people just don't prioritize those relationships. And they can have all three of the others, but they still can't get things done.
That's awesome. And was that in a more like of a management role, oversight role?
It was like middle management, but I was working with a lot of other middle managers.
Yeah. If you ever find yourself in a scenario, there's a book called The First 90 Days. I can't remember who the author is, but it helps think through, you know, a lot of leaders who are real high competency, high credibility, get stuff done, end up getting promoted, even like despite character stuff. And so what happens with leaders who get stuff done into more senior positions, like, well, I guess you just want me to keep on getting stuff done. And so you kind of keep going forward and you neglect the chemistry part. So there's some really good tactics around like, yeah, listening, building relationship, building rapport. And that book, First 90 Days, has some really good stuff in it. So, okay, let's maybe hear one more person. Which one for you stands out the most? Yeah.
I'll say chemistry.
Chemistry. This is a whole group of chemistry people. Y'all like
it. But
each other.
I used to think of it in the context of competency.
Okay.
So I would think, oh, you have this, they have that. That would make a
yeah.
good cohesion. And it would take you to where you're going to and produce results.
Yeah.
So that's how I thought of chemistry rather than down to like a value system or.
Right. So thinking about chemistry, I'll just repeat it for people in the back, is that she was saying chemistry, thinking more of it around competency of like, oh, if this is finding a good fit on a team and how we're getting stuff done as a team, but maybe not thinking as much about, oh, from a values perspective, how I align there. There's lots of, you know, there's all kinds of personality profiles and assessments around there. One of them that aligns this really closely is called Working Genius. If you've heard of that one, you can do it. And it really talks about sort of where you fit on a team and what you're highlighting. This relationship does become more significant, and more senior leaders and organizations are going to be thinking like, oh, is she the kind of person that could fit not just in our company, but in our management team and our senior leadership team? And it really is a lot around chemistry and competency. Really good. Okay, we're going to keep going. Oh, on time. Okay, we're going to start to talk about how different generations think differently about leadership. Back at the beginning, older leaders, younger leaders, it's not just about where people find themselves in organizations, but actually different generations think very differently about leadership as a starting point. So for most of human history, I mean, really since the Industrial Revolution, the way that companies have worked is there tends to be three generations working together. Okay, so you have the oldest generation, they're like the boss, they're the master, they're the mentor, they're the people who have been around a long, long time, they know everything about everything, they have lots of expertise, they have organizational, institutional knowledge, they just know lots of stuff, and they are getting ready to enjoy the end of their life. Hopefully. There's a second generation in the workplace, and they're the ones who are getting stuff done. They got lots of energy, they like the job, they like the place, and they're going to spend lots of time just doing the work and getting it done. There's a third generation who are there in entry-level positions. If we were to think about an org chart, traditionally they're here, right? They're the people who are starting the company, they're just happy to get a paycheck and a key to the place, and they'll sweep floors and fill boxes and do whatever it takes to be part of the team. And over time, as these generations get older, the boss, the master, the mentor decides to leave, either of their own decision or God finishes it for them. The second generation moves into the master-mentor position, right? Not holistically, but there's some people in this generation who have risen up and take those opportunities. And now the entry-level people who have been around for a little while and have been sweeping floors and filling boxes, now they're like, hey, we've got some cool opportunities for you. You can now move into this sort of middle generation seat. And maybe if you're really lucky, somebody will die and you'll get their office. Okay? And this has been how this has happened. And then as these people move up, new people come in. So this, right, you see, you kind of get how this works, is just three generations working together. One moves on. The second takes their place. Third generation continues to get refilled. What is happening really right now, really interesting for a few reasons, I'll talk to you in a second, is for the first time, as far as we know, we have four generations working together. And soon we're going to have five. Because Gen Alpha, most of you are like Gen Z or young millennials, Gen Alpha is coming for you. And they're actually going to join the workforce before boomers are gone. Okay, so we're going to talk about these four generations. We're not going to talk about Gen Alpha, but we're going to talk about four generations: boomers, Gen X, millennials, and Gen Z. Boomers, I know it's like this like derogatory thing, and it's a slang, and my kids call me a boomer. It's like, no, sir. Why do we call them baby boomers? They're born after the war. Everyone got home from the war. They were real happy to see each other. There are lots of babies, and so demographically, we have this big bump, right? Lots of babies come along, and as that generation grows up and gets older, there's lots of opportunity. They can make lots of money. They're pretty healthy, and they can get lots of stuff done. So boomers tend to be workaholics. Boomers tend to not really care much about work-life balance. Actually, that idea feels a little icky to boomers, but they're people who grew up in this world where, like, if you want to accomplish something, you got to do it for yourself, and there's always opportunity to do it. All you do is go to college and get a job and buy a house, and that's how you have the good life. Then Gen X comes along. Gen X is born. I know you're all laughing. You're like, isn't that cute? Gen X born kind of late 60s through to the early 80s. Gen X grows up in this world where both parents are working. So Gen X are often referred to as latchkey kids. You ever heard that term before? The idea of a latchkey kid is that Gen X kids got home from school and there was nobody at home. And so they had to like let themselves in the house, which feels very normal because you can do it from your phone. But this is actually a significant societal change. That like neither mom or dad are home. And really neither, like mom's not home when kids get home. So Gen X starts to like figure stuff out for themselves. Gen X is the generation that has a bin in their basement to like convert every cable to another cable. And those of you who are laughing know exactly what I mean. My wife and I, and you're like, this is the dumbest thing, but my wife and I, 2 weeks ago, I'm not kidding, we went into the basement and I had to pull out the box. And she made me get rid of the cable that plugs into a printer. Remember the one that was like this wide with like 100 pins? And on the other end, which I was like, I don't even know what that does anymore. I had to get rid of it, and I did. I got rid of many things in my bin. Sonia says I didn't get rid of enough. But Gen X is like this adapter. Gen X grew up in an analog world, and then the internet was invented when we were in high school. And so Gen X becomes like this translator generation, this adapter generation. Then millennials come along. And millennials are like, cool, I'm going to like live on a beach and chase butterflies and live out the back of a van. Millennials are like, I've seen what happens when boomers just want to make money and destroy their families. And Gen X seems like a bunch of like lazy dudes just sitting around doing nothing. I want to experience the world. I want to get out there and see what there is. And what we've started to see with millennials is then they start to realize like, oh, I need some money. And so... So millennials begin this idea of becoming influencers. And what it's really interesting, we've got this mirror of like millennials kind of become workaholics around like building my own reality or like building the world and knowing how to monetize that. Then Gen Z shows up. Gen Z is born mostly after 9/11. So like if you don't remember 9/11 happening, that's the beginning of Gen Z. And Gen Z grows up, and a lot of you in this room are, this idea of globalism goes away. So in the 90s, like the late 20th century, the late 1900s, there was this idea of globalism, that like we're kind of one family around the world, and every country cares about every other country. And 9/11 shuts that off pretty quickly. So Gen Z is born into that world. Then we have 2008 financial crisis, housing crisis, banking crisis, the idea of pensions goes away, traditional family starts to fall apart. I'm really inspiring you. Churches, like what faith communities, that's then like educational institutions, the idea of going to university and getting a degree and that means you get a job, that's going away. So Gen Z grows up in the world where they now start to see that they have to create their own stability. Because there is no stability out there in the world that I can't count on. And what happens is Gen Z is now the first generation, as far as we know, the first generation in the history of the world where family is not their number one core value. For Gen Z, stability is the number one core value. So you see Gen Z, probably many of you, like side hustles, trying to find significant relationships outside of your family because family relationships don't feel super stable. Side note, those of you who are involved in churches and faith communities, I think this is a massive opportunity for churches to create stable environments for Gen Z. And I think it's one of the things we're beginning to see, this idea of the quiet revolution, Gen Z actually making their way back to faith in environments not that are mega church production light show, but in historic liturgical environments because it has a depth and a weight of stability that we're really looking for. So, we now have these four generations working together in the workplace. And instead of one generation moving on and continuing to happen, what happens is we've got boomers who are staying healthier longer and they want to work longer. And they tend to have good jobs that are really well paid and they have a lot of time off and they like to travel and do their stuff. And there's nothing pushing them out and there's nothing pulling them away. And then we have Gen X who are waiting for opportunity to move into this master mentor seat and aren't getting this opportunity. And what's happening is we're seeing leadership getting skipped over a generation to millennials, but the flaky ones aren't really delivering. And so we're seeing more Gen Z young leaders getting significant leadership opportunities, maybe not being the CEO or the boss, but moving into more significant leadership opportunities, in a sense, like ahead of your time, which is really exciting and really terrifying all at the same time. But we don't have a lot of data on like, how do we do this? Because what you're living through is brand new. So if this is part of what's driving you towards being here today, just like understand this is true and what you're feeling is real. What isn't getting talked about a lot is that these two generations, Gen X and boomers, and these two generations, millennials and Gen Z, tend to think about leadership very, very differently. So when boomers are coming to millennials and Gen Z and saying like, I want you to lead this place, most Gen Z are like, that sounds terrible. I don't want to be that. I don't want to be you. I hate the way that you run this place. I'm here for a paycheck so that I can live the other parts of my life. And boomers and Gen X leaders don't understand why millennials and Gen Z don't aspire to leadership. And one of the big reasons is they think about it really differently. So I want to talk to you about this, and I want to do this so that you understand how the old people are thinking about leadership. Usually when I'm doing talks like this, I'm talking to the old people, and I'm telling them how they need to shift their posture to understand how young leaders are thinking. But I want to give you some inside info on boomers and Gen X. Okay, we use two triangles, and I want you to think about this as leadership posture. This isn't like everything that defines every boomer or every Gen X leader in your world, but leaders who grew up in the 20th century, they have this posture that was like, this is what leadership is. Leadership books, leadership training, characters in TV and in movies exemplified a certain kind of posture of what leadership is. And so it's like the water that they swim in. It's what we grew up in. It's what we were fed as we were being developed. It's this idea of like a 20th century leadership posture, where millennials and Gen Zs tend to think more of a 21st century leadership posture. As we talk about this, this is not right and this is not wrong, but they're different. And I use triangles just to show you like they're 180 degrees different. They're very different. So if you think about leaders in your world, older leaders, and you're just like, they just don't get it. In some ways, you're right. Like, they don't get it. They see the world and they think about leadership very differently than you do. So the three primary ways that 20th century leaders, boomers and Gen X, tend to think about leadership is like three sides of a triangle. They tend to think that being a leader means you have to be visionary. You have to like really see the future. You have to capture what the future is, what's possible. You have to communicate it. You have to inspire people to it. You have to rally people around it. The second side of the triangle is that you, as a leader, you have to be directive. Once we've got a vision for the future and I'm building my team and you work for me, I tell you what to do. That's my job as a leader. We've got a vision. I'm inspiring towards it. This is your job, go and do it. And the third side of the triangle is that we're all about results. At the end of the day, we have to deliver, you have to deliver, and if you don't, you're out. Because I need somebody else on my team who can deliver the results that we need and make it happen. And usually when we're talking about results, that's connected to a process. We know what we want to get, and we are the leaders, we know how to get it. And so you need to follow our process and make it happen. You might look at this and you're like, oh, I know some boomers and they're not like that at all. Or like, oh, I'm a Gen Z, I'm a millennial. And like, yeah, but I resonate with some of this. And that's probably true. You probably do know people who are not quite like this. And you would say, well, I think some of these things are important. My point in illustrating this is like, this is what was held up as 20th century leaders were being developed and were growing up and were being trained. It's like, this is what makes a good leader. 21st century leaders, how do they tend to see the world? The first side of the triangle is that being in relationship with the people that I lead is really important. Being in relationship with the people who lead me and being in relationship with the people who lead my team. A lot of you are nodding. you probably know people in your life, and if they haven't made this clear to you, actually they are quite fine if they don't have any relationship with you at all. This isn't a really significant part of a 20th century leadership paradigm. The second side of the triangle is coaching. Is that 21st century leaders, rather than being directive, a 21st century posture and paradigm thinks much more about coaching. So we might have a vision for the future, and we might be in a relationship, we're having a good time on the team together. I'm like, what do you need to be good at your job? How can I help you? How can I support you? How can I encourage you and make sure that you've got what you need? Because my job as a leader is to coach my team to be able to do that. Much more of a posture of 21st century leader. It tends to be much more of a struggle. It doesn't mean that 20th century leaders can't do it, but it's much more a struggle challenge. The third side of the triangle for 21st century leaders is to be focused more on outcomes. And you're like, that sounds like a synonym of results. How is outcomes different than results? At the end of the day, results about following a process to get what we need. Outcomes, 21st century leaders might be like, okay, I know what we're trying to produce. I know the result what we're trying to get. I would like to have more input in developing and designing and executing the process to get there. And as we're thinking about what our results are, we need to think about all of the costs of those outcomes. Because it's not just financial. There's people costs. Maybe there's environmental costs. There could be all kinds of costs. And 21st century leaders tend to think much more about all of the outcomes, all of the costs of delivering results, where 20th century leaders tend to be more focused on results at any cost. I don't care if you get burned out. I don't care if it has all kinds of implications. This is what we need to do, okay? If you're a millennial, Gen Z, you might think like, oh, but like, I think I can be visionary. I think I can be directive. Again, that's probably true. You may also have 21st century leaders who are around you. What tends to be true as young leaders, if you get an opportunity as a young leader to be leading a team and you have older people on your team, this tends to be the area where there's the most tension. That young leaders with older people on their team, you're just trying to coach them and like, yeah, like, I don't know, you can figure it out. And like, yeah, let's do that. And you have older people on your team who are like, just tell me what to do. Tell me what I need to get done.
Also,
and
you're like, ooh, that sounds harsh. But you do it because
they're like, I would much rather just coach you and encourage you and help you. And you need to know there are older people on your teams. They are looking for you. Light bulb just went off.
Does it say specifically in the Bible?
They are looking for you to be directed. And actually, it's not rude. It's not disrespectful. I'm not going to call you a boomer. It's actually what they expect. They expect leaders to be directed and to be visionary. So the way I want to bring this home for you as you're thinking about this
kind of like an
is
thing
one is not right and one is not wrong. Leaders need to be visionary. Leaders need to capture a real clear possibly for the future and actually inspiring and to communicate that to other people. And as you communicate that out to your team, you need to be in relationship with them. You need to know them as people, not just for what they produce. They need to know you as a human, as a person. And you need to be developing a relationship. The vision alone is not enough.
To cut it off, the confession has to happen.
Same thing with results and outcomes. You can't say, well, like results don't mean anything. As long as you're aware of them. At the end of the day, corporate environment, ministry environment, is we do care about results, but we also need to pay attention to outcomes as we do that. So leaders, young leaders, as you're growing and developing, what I've seen all the time is you can get into conversation with older leaders and say, oh, I think you're wanting me to be a bit more directive, and I'm maybe sitting in too much of a coaching posture. Thank you for realizing that. But also, most of my conversations with older leaders is you have less time than these people do, and so we need to shift our posture. And with ministry leaders, I talk about Philippians 2, considering other people more important than yourself, that Jesus came to serve, not to be served. And so we need to position and posture ourselves more in a relational context, coaching context, outcome context. But as 21st century leaders, also understand that there are some of these other paradigms of leadership.
I don't know what's going on, but I have all these things from like really, really strange things that were not part of her life at all. Once we cut the one about more times,
as
a whole new freedom. So, yeah, yes, I agree with you. It's not these prayers and all of these things are not written in Scripture. But there is enough in Scripture to go, this is what people did about, like, theologians over the last 2,000 years. They were like, something is not, we're not free here. And those who have the gift of discernment, when you can see the enemy and actually find out, that's what it was.
Yeah.
It's like, no, I have rights to this person because their parents sinned in this way.
And what do you think? How do you honor, acknowledge an older generation,
so go ahead and
come in
it.
With a
you
bit of a
might
different
be better at researching than me, but
how do you do that? How do you
I agree, it's not in there, and it's not what we've been taught.
What has been done?
I think
what has worked?
For non-Christians,
what do we need to change for success to be true in the future?
But where? How much?
I'll go to what you said.
Question.
Like, how
maybe
do we
you are the
acknowledge what's been done
it
and honor the past? That's how you do it. You acknowledge what's been done and you honor
so
the past.
We talk about Scripture being
and
normative.
If we go back here, one of the things that we
like,
see with Gen Z is Gen Z does not see an org chart like this.
Normative
with
is
a CEO at the top, and aren't I lucky to be somewhere on the team, and maybe eventually I'll be invited into
you know, like
into
it's not going to tell us how
the
to
way
run
Gen
a service.
Z sees
like,
an org chart is this
so
way.
There's so much that's actually not explained.
And
so
if you're the CEO and I'm the entry level assistant, associate, janitor of that wing, cool. Like we're both on the same team, and you have a vote, and I have a vote.
These are some of the things that they.
That's not going to win.
Yeah, feel free to.
In a paradigm for 20th century leaders, like I'm up here and you're down here.
It's a very academic,
you acknowledge what's been done,
thorough. It's not on there. I can write it for you. Do you have a pen?
You deliver on what you've been asked to so that you earn the right to be heard. Is that helpful? Great. Okay. We're at time. I'm going to stick around if you want to come and get pictures of anything here. Oh, no, some pictures of me. That sounded very... No. If you want to get pictures of any of these here, you can come and do that. If you do have questions... Oh, before you go. Because I told you we would have an opportunity to do this. Before we go, turn to the person beside you. What's your takeaway out of this conversation? What's the thing that you're leaving this workshop with? Turn to the person beside you, 30 seconds. Go. All right. Awesome. Thanks, everyone. Thanks for your time. Thanks for coming. I'll stick around for questions. I'll be around the rest of the day. Enjoy the rest of the time at Upwork.